Hey babe, I'm sorry you're not feeling well. Why don't you scoot over? I'll join you on the couch and we'll snuggle up. I have a blanket here and I thought maybe you'd like if I read to you. It could be nice, couldn't it? Yeah. I'll just sit up and you lean against me. Or you can rest your head in my lap and just listen to my voice. Snuggle close. I'm gonna read you the story of Connla and the Fairy Maiden. Connla of the Fiery Hair was son of Conn of the Hundred Fights. One day, as he stood by the side of his father on the height of the Usna, he saw a maiden clad in strange attire coming towards him. "Whence comest thou, maiden?" said Connla. "I come from the plains of the ever-living," she said. "There where there is neither death nor sin, there we keep holiday alway, nor need we help from any in our joy, and in all our pleasure we have no strife. And because we have our homes in the round green hills, men call us the hill folk." The king and all with him wondered much to hear a voice when they saw no one, for save Connla alone, none saw the fairy maiden. "To whom art thou talking, my son?" said Conn the king. Then the maiden answered, "Connla speaks to a young fair maid whom neither death nor old age awaits. I love Connla, and now I call him away to the plain of pleasure, Moymel, where Boadag is king for aye. Nor has there been complaint or sorrow in that land since he has held the kingship. Oh, come with me, Connla of the fiery hair, ruddy as the dawn with thy tawny skin. A fairy crown awaits thee to grace thy comely face and royal form. Come, and never shall thy comeliness fade, nor thy youth, to the last awful day of judgment." The king, in fear at what the maiden said, which he heard though he could not see her, called aloud to his druid, Corin by name. "O Corin of the many spells," he said, "and of the cunning magic, I call upon thy aid. A task is upon me too great for all my skill and wit, greater than any laid upon me since I seized the kingship. A maiden unseen has met us, and by her power would take from me my dear, my comely son. If thou help not, he will be taken from thy king by woman's wiles and witchery." Then Corin the druid stood forth and chanted his spells toward the spot where the maiden's voice had been heard. And none heard her voice again, nor could Connla see her any longer. Only as she vanished before the druid's mighty spell, she threw an apple to Connla. For a whole month from that day, Connla would take nothing, either to eat or to drink, save only from that apple. But as he ate, it grew again and always kept whole. And all the while there grew within him a mighty yearning and longing after the maiden he had seen. But when the last day of the month of waiting came, Connla stood by the side of his father on the plain of Arcomin, and again he saw the maiden come towards him, and again she spoke to him. "'Tis a glorious place, forsooth, that Connla holds among short-lived mortals awaiting the day of death. But now the folk of life, the ever-living ones, beg and bid thee come to Moymel, the plain of pleasure, for they have learnt to know thee, seeing thee in thy home among thy dear ones." When Conn the king heard the maiden's voice, he called to his men aloud and said, "Summon swift my druid Corin, for I see she has again this day the power of speech." Then the maiden said, "O mighty Conn, fighter of a hundred fights, the druid's power is little loved. It has little honor in the mighty land, peopled with so many of the upright. When the law will come, it will do away with the druid's magic spells that come from the lips of the false black demon." Then Conn the king observed that since the maiden came, Connla his son spoke to none that spake to him. So Conn of the Hundred Fights said to him, "Is it to thy mind what the woman says, my son?" "'Tis hard upon me, then," said Connla. "I love my own folk above all things, but yet a longing seizes me for the maiden." When the maiden heard this, she answered and said, The ocean is not so strong as the waves of thy longing. Come with me in my Kura, the gleaming, straight-gliding crystal canoe. Soon we can reach Boadag's realm. I see the bright sun sink, yet far as it is, we can reach it before dark. There is, too, another land worthy of thy journey, a land joyous to all that seek it. Only wives and maidens dwell there. If thou wilt, we can seek it and live there alone together in joy. When the maiden ceased to speak, Connla of the fiery hair rushed away from them and sprang into the Kura, the gleaming, straight-gliding crystal canoe. And then they all, king and court, saw it glide away over the bright sea towards the setting sun, away and away, till I could see it no longer. And Connla and the fairy maiden went their way on the sea and were no more seen, nor did any know where they came. So what did you think? Did you like that story? It's actually taken from a public domain list of folk and fairy tales. This one is from an anthology called The Celtic Fairy Tales. I believe it was edited and published in the late 1800s. But this story itself was originally from 1100 AD and after. I didn't know that, so I thought that was quite interesting. Is there time to read another story? I see another one in the book that might be interesting. I've actually never read this one before. We'll be reading it first together. This one is called The Sprightly Tailor. It's also from the Celtic Fairy Tales. A sprightly tailor was employed by the great MacDonald in his castle at Saddell in order to make the laird a pair of trews used in olden time. And trews, being the vest and breeches united in one piece and ornamented with fringes, were very comfortable and suitable to be worn in walking or dancing. And MacDonald had said to the tailor that if he would make the trews by night in the church, he would get a handsome reward, for it was thought that the old ruined church was haunted and that fearsome things were to be seen there at night. The tailor was well aware of this, but he was a sprightly man, and when the laird dared him to make the trews by night in the church, the tailor was not to be daunted, but took it in hand to gain the prize. So when night came, away he went up the glen, about half a mile distance from the castle, till he came to the old church. Then he chose him a nice gravestone for his seat, and he lighted his candle, and he put on his thimble, and set to work at the trews, plying his needle nimbly, and thinking about the hire that the laird would have to give him. For some time he got on pretty well, until he felt the floor all a-tremble under his feet, and looking about him, but keeping his fingers at work, he saw the appearance of a great human head rising up through the stone pavement of the church. And when the head had risen above the surface, there came from it a great, great voice, and the voice said, "Do you see this great head of mine?" "I see that, but I'll sew this," replied the sprightly tailor, and he stitched away at the trews. Then the head rose higher up the pavement until its neck appeared, and when its neck was shown, the thundering voice came again and said, "Do you see this great neck of mine?" "I see that, but I'll sew this," said the sprightly tailor, and he stitched away at his trews. Then the head and neck rose higher still until the great shoulders and chest were shown above the ground, and again the mighty voice thundered, "Do you see this great chest of mine?" And again the sprightly tailor replied, "I see that, but I'll sew this," and stitched away at his trews. And still it kept rising through the pavement until it shook a great pair of arms in the tailor's face and said, "Do you see these great arms of mine?" "I see those, but I'll sew this," answered the tailor. And he stitched hard at his trews, for he knew that he had no time to lose. The sprightly tailor was taking the long stitches when he saw it gradually rising and rising through the floor until it lifted out a great leg and, stamping with it upon the pavement, said in a roaring voice, "Do you see this great leg of mine?" "Aye, aye, I see that, "But I'll sew this," cried the tailor, and his fingers flew with the needle, and he took such long stitches that he was just come to the end of the trews when it was taking up its other leg. But before it could pull it out of the pavement, the sprightly tailor had finished his task, and, blowing out his candle and springing from off his gravestone, he buckled up and ran out of the church with the trews under his arm. Then the fearsome thing gave a loud roar and stamped with both his feet upon the pavement, and out of the church he went after the sprightly tailor. Down the glen they ran, faster than the stream when the flood rides it, but the tailor had got the start and a nimble pair of legs, and he did not choose to lose the laird's reward. And though the thing roared to him to stop, yet the sprightly tailor was not the man to be beholden to a monster. So he held his trews tight and let no darkness grow under his feet until he had reached Saddle Castle. He had no sooner got inside the gate and shut it than the apparition came up to it and, enraged at losing his prize, struck the wall above the gate and left there the mark of his 5 great fingers. Ye may see them plainly to this day if ye only peer close enough. But the sprightly tailor gained his reward, for MacDonald paid him handsomely for the trews, and never discovered that a few of the stitches were somewhat long. Oh, I've never read that one before. I don't know why, that just gave me a chuckle. So that was the sprightly tailor, also from the Celtic fairy tales. Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing me read these stories for you. And if you like them enough, perhaps I'll read a few more, maybe from a different book. So anyway, I hope you're keeping well, and until next time, take care.